Today in Birmingham, Alabama, defense attorneys made their case for former Ku Klux Klansman Bobby Frank Cherry. Cherry is on trial for his alleged role in the 1963 church bombing that killed four young African-American girls. Witnesses, including Cherry's ex-wife, have testified that he boasted about planting the bomb in the 16th Street Baptist Church. But defense lawyers say the government doesn't have hard evidence against Cherry and that the FBI has targeted him unfairly. Cherry is the last of the men suspected in the bombing to go on trial. Two others have already been convicted of murder. Journalist Diane McWhorter is the author of Carry Me Home, Birmingham, Alabama, The Climactic Battle for the Civil Rights Revolution. She attended the trial this past week and joins us now. Diane McWhorter, you were there. What was the atmosphere like?
The atmosphere this time around was really subdued in contrast to the trial of Tommy Blanton, who was Bobby Cherry's Klan brother, convicted of the crime a year ago. You may remember that Cherry had been declared incompetent to stand trial and was somehow rehabilitated now a year later. There had been sort of a circus atmosphere among the media. We were all looking for what the story was, and nobody could quite find it, so the journalistic cliche everyone seemed to settle on was closure. There's been very little mention of closure, thank God, this time. The Blanton trial took place in the sort of the grandest courtroom in the city, this time that the judge who presided over that courtroom didn't want to be inconvenient, so it's taking place in sort of a skanky basement courtroom in an auxiliary courthouse, and the victims' families are seated in folding metal chairs in front of the benches, and there are a lot of national reporters, but mostly the same crew from last time. Mm-hmm. And once again, we outnumber the civilian spectators from the city. However, last time there was quite a bit of resistance on the part of the city on talk radio shows. People were calling in saying, you know, why are you forcing this down our throats? I had made an offhanded comment to somebody that I was surprised at how few people had attended, and the next day's headline said, you know, author berate city for not caring about the trial. And then civic groups started calling people and saying, oh, we're going to be embarrassed again, and, you know, people better show we care. This time there's really none of that. There seems to be a very businesslike atmosphere. The judge opens the proceedings every day by saying, put him in the box, talking about the jurors.
So do you have a sense that that Birmingham has come to terms, may be the wrong word, but it is somehow mature enough to say, this is the past, this is what we have to confront, this is what we go through, and there's a rather more judicious atmosphere?
Yeah, I think it is a sign of progress. It's sort of like, this is, we've got a job to get done, let's get down to business. We're not going to wring our hands about what the meaning of it is and whether there is a meaning. The reporters were sort of, last time, were sort of trying to force this meaning on it. The city itself was having a hard time processing, and now it's just, let's do it. Hmm. African Americans last time were also seemingly apathetic. A woman who was at the church on the morning it was bombed told me, though, that they were so apprehensive that the system was not going to work for them again, that they didn't really want to get their hopes up.
Certainly the testimony from survivors and relatives of survivors is so painful. What is the sort of feeling of the African-American community now?
I think that people are a little worried about the jury. It looks like a defendant's jury. There are no African-American women on the jury, which was the main demographic of the Blanton jury a year ago. There are a lot of white women, even some white men. There were no white men on the jury last time, which is being used as grounds for appeal of the Blanton case. I would say, you know, there are not that many African-Americans in the courtroom outside the sort of professional civil rights activists and the families, but there's just kind of a quiet, let's watch it, and let's let the system work.
Hmm. Diane McWhorter, you talk in your book about your father being, if not precisely a Klansman, then certainly a member of that political spectrum. How does he, if at all, connect with someone like Bobby Frank Cherry?
Well, I had feared that he knew those guys. He had actually told me that he knew Robert Chambliss, who was known as Dynamite Bob and was convicted of the bombing in 1977. He was the first of the three suspects to go on trial. And it turned out he didn't, but it sort of gives you a sense of how of the perverse ways in which the city tries to connect with this crime, that they almost want to become part of it, even if it's in some kind of fraudulent way. On the other hand, it's sort of has been a decades-long denial on the part of the civic establishment that this crime had anything to do with them. The church bombers were always portrayed as members of a lunatic fringe. People say maybe they weren't even from Birmingham. And what I talked about and documented in my book was how closely tied they were to City Hall. I mean, the very Klansmen who bombed the church had been protected by City Hall for years. The police commissioner, Bull Connor, had ordered at least 2 assassination attempts against the leading civil rights figure in Birmingham, Fred Shuttlesworth. So that's the kind of thing that's not coming out in a trial like this. Mm-hmm. But it was really astonishing to me the extent to which the Klansmen were acting on the authority of the official culture.
Do you think that Charity still represents the views of anyone in Birmingham?
There are some people who feel that way. I happened to call on somebody who shared a name with a witness in the case, and it was an unusual name, and I knocked on her door, and her husband, and it sort of turned out to be a case of mistaken identity, but her husband came out to me and said, we don't want our names in the paper, you know, that the Negroes, although he didn't say that, can get away with anything they want, and he said, whoever did that crime did it for a reason, and we ought to let it alone. Mm. And that was about a year ago that somebody said that to me. So there is that element still there. The difference now is that somebody said that this was the best sign of progress they could think of. Back then, it was the good people who were afraid to speak out for fear of bodily harm and social reprisal, and they had to keep their liberal views to themselves. Now, those are the mainstream, and those are the sort of official voice of Birmingham, and it's the bigots who have to keep quiet and speak under cover of in the anonymity of talk radio.
And what are the relatives of the girls who were killed saying about their expectations of the trial?
The relatives, particularly Chris and Maxine McNair, who were Denise McNair's parents. She was the 11-year-old who died in the blast. Chris McNair has had a long career as a politician in the city and has been very sensitive about appearing to exploit this tragedy for his political career. He has almost never spoken about it. Occasionally he'll address it, but he doesn't speak to reporters at the trial, and the victims' families are pretty much left alone. There was this sort of chilling moment in the courtroom this week when the photographs of the victims' corpses were shown to the jury, and the screen on which they saw it had been sort of averted from the spectators. Partly this was because they didn't want reaction from the audience to affect the jurors, but also I think it was out of respect for the victims' families.
Well, Diane McWhorter, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Diane McWhorter is a journalist and the author of Carry Me Home, Birmingham, Alabama, The Climactic Battle for the Civil Rights Revolution.